SEO equals keywords? Nope. Let's get you out of that tar pit. Here's your chance to understand where Google has gone and is going. SEO concepts from entity to mobile to portable to functional. We've got Cindy Crum here, SEO Sherpa, today on The Edge. Go!
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics. This week's featured guest is Cindy Crum, SEO and founder of Mobile Moxie. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
Welcome back to The Edge. This is Edge of the Web Radio. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks, owner of Site Strategics, a digital marketing firm here in Indianapolis, Indiana. Every week, we bring you amazing guests to chat about digital marketing tactics and trending news of the week. We unpack a key marketing topic for our digital marketing audience. Whether you are part of an agency, a freelancer, or part of a firm, this show is for you. So check out all the recent shows over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. Edge of the Web is brought to you by Site Strategics, the title sponsor of this interview series show. We're pioneers in agile digital marketing. Our core specialties are SEO, SEM, social media, marketing and management, conversion rate optimization, as well as omni-channel media marketing. So check out what we do over at sitestrategics.com or just give us a call, 877-SEO for web, or I'll spell it out for you. Well, I just did spell it out for you, but I'll break it into the numbers here, 877-736-4932, because I get pissed whenever somebody gives me that vanity number. But we still have it around. So be it. All right, so just want to let you know who will be coming up on the show over the next few episodes. We were able to sit down and talk with Mark Williams Cook, Cyrus Shepherd, as well as Kevin Indig. Be sure to check out the recent shows we've had with Marie Haynes, Crystal Carter, and Dan Schur. If you're interested in being part of The Edge, drop us a line at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. That's info@edgeofthewebradio.com. Make sure you set your reminders on YouTube to get notified when we drop our video shorts of these interviews. Also, make sure that you check out our weekly news podcast covering the most recent digital marketing news, as well as Google updates, because they are coming fast and furious. We're dropping it every Tuesday to help you navigate the week in digital marketing. Continue on the show as a co-host is the indomitable Morty Oberstein. Check the news out because we have a great time. Crack ourselves up every week, and hopefully we bring the fun to you guys as well. So with that, that's housekeeping for The Edge. Now let's meet this week's industry expert guest. Cindy Crum is the CEO and founder of Mobile Moxie. She founded that in 2008 and provides mobile SEO and ASO consultancy, as well as offering a full custom suite of cutting edge online mobile marketing and SEO tools. Cindy's an active member in the digital marketing and growth communities and is passionate about mobile marketing. She's highly sought after as a conference speaker, presenting and training in-house teams throughout the U.S. and the world. She also serves as a faculty at Rutgers University, teaching mobile marketing in a digital mini MBA program, and soon a dedicated semester-long mobile marketing course, which is pretty cool. She actually travels around the world speaking and training people in mobile SEO and mobile marketing. Some of the events that Cindy regularly actually presents is at Search Marketing Expo, at SMX, Search Engine Strategies, Ad Tech, Affiliate Conference, Online Marketing Strategies, and more. And you can hear her in a lot of different spaces here, not nearly as much as we would like. I'm going to tease this up because there's a lot that Cindy packs into her presentations. So without further ado, why don't you, Cindy, join us and share with us a little bit about your bio that I didn't cover in the official bio there. Welcome on board today.
And thanks for the great introduction.
More than welcome. Yeah.
I'll start by mentioning that bio is a little bit old, so the Rutgers thing has happened already, and that was a few years ago when I was teaching at Rutgers, but it was a lot of fun, very cool opportunity, and I'm happy that I did it. But let's see, other than this stuff that you mentioned, I've been doing SEO since about 2003, right? You know, in the very early days, mm-hmm. when it was still a question of which search engine was going to win, and people still used, you know, some of the smaller ones, Ask Jeeves and AltaVista and stuff like that a little bit. And at that point, I was building websites, and then I started doing SEO. Mm-hmm. And then I got my first fancy phone and saw how bad the search results were and started to just try and wonder why and try and figure it out. And that's how I got into it, was just curiosity and wanting to help make search results better on mobile.
Which we appreciate, and you've been doing this for a very long time. I'm going to tease this up to our listeners here. Mobile SEO may not be what you think is by the time you get done with this show. I'm just going to set that aside here for a second. So, Cindy, you were on the show 4 years ago, and I'm ashamed that I hadn't asked you to come back around and talk to us. 4 years in digital marketing, but more especially SEO, is a lifetime. There have been so many changes, so many evolutions in search, and Google's doing so many things differently that we had never even experienced 4 years ago. But you were actually very, very pointed whenever you came on the show in 2018. I was prepping for the show, and I actually went back to the old show and found something very, very interesting. We were talking about categorization of businesses, and around the 39-minute mark, I'm going to ask Jacob to pull this guy in here. You rang my bell then, and it was kind of really astounding to listen to this now in 2022. So check this out.
And so it already has a map of how these topics are related. And so being able to claim this entity, this Nike entity, if you can prove that you're with Nike and on the marketing team and whatever, mm-hmm. then you can influence the branded entity directly.
So this concept of entities is very, I mean, obviously it's a bit nebulous. Do we have any mapped structure of where we're seeing Google display this this entity claiming opportunity, or do we have any map of just the knowledge graph and how much information Google's really sending out there?
Yes, there is a hierarchy, and I think you can find a flat hierarchy or documentation of the hierarchy somewhere in Google Docs. But also, the easy way to do it is go look at Google Market Finder. And see all the ways that you can classify your company, and it allows you to drill down within a bunch of different things to mm-hmm. choose five categorizations that describe your company, and that's what's replicated in the Google Docs. If you can't find it, just go to Market Finder. Yep.
Well, there it is right there. Yeah, and you can start to see you start setting the course by defining yourself, but you also see these subsets, and you're kind of walking in there with a flashlight, and you're not seeing the entire piece, but you are seeing your piece and the additional sub information in your space, and it does give you an understanding of what Google's finding important, because it doesn't put all of the subcategories of information out there, right? So, reflecting back there, that was the moment that I realized that we are in the entity SEO world, and I just wanted to reflect back because that's actually a steerage point for our entire company, that particular show, Cindy. So I just wanted to say, give a throwback, but also thank you, because that was one of those pillar moments in the Edge history where we really started to grab a hold of what is entity SEO, what are entities, and the like. So it was just entertaining whenever, or at least for me, going back in time and say, my gosh, Cindy was right there on the stick. You were on it in that space where there were almost nobody actually focusing on entity concepts. I'll tee it up to you. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great that you noticed. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
It's happened a couple times. I've actually started to build a reputation for being able to predict with pretty good accuracy where Google is going to go and where they're headed next and why they're doing things. Mm-hmm. And so that's happened with entities. You know, I was talking about entities pretty early, and then also Fraggles and PWAs. Yep. So it's happened more than once.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate being recognized for it, because I think people just hear about it from wherever and they assume that everyone's already known this forever, and it's like, no, someone had to say it first, and sometimes it's me.
Absolutely. And that was my intent here, is really to kind of show some light on Cindy, because you're not a regular practitioner pushing out content all the time. You do it at seminars and conferences. You're not writing 30 blogs in a year. You're not churning that up. You're working more than you're actually talking about things in there, but you're absolutely in the space. We want to make sure that everybody knows these are the earlier identifiers, and Cindy is one of them. Jason Bernard's out there, and not everybody's been at this table, and we're blessed to be able to actually have these type of conversations, not only for Site Strategics, but to be able to keep on moving this ball forward. And you've been calling it out early on, so before anything else, let's get to the concept at hand here. I want to make sure that we led with entity SEO in this discussion. I think it's where all our listeners need to kind of understand and put everything in of what we talk about in context in these next couple of interviews here. So for the newcomers to the SEO game that we have in front of us, what is entity SEO? Go.
Okay, so it's optimizing for entities instead of keywords, or entities along with keywords. And this can be actually really hard for people who've been doing SEO for a long time to grasp, because for so long people have focused on keywords, and it's hard to think about a thing as not a keyword. But entities are person, place, thing, thought, idea, concept, and they exist before language, and that's kind of esoteric. But what it means is it's a thing that exists that is described by language and keywords, but it exists, and its inner relation to other things that exist stays somewhat permanent regardless of what language or keywords you're using to describe it. So for instance,
they're like archetypes, so to speak. There are things beyond language, beyond syntax, right?
Before. So maybe it's easier for me to think of it as before. This existed, and now we have languages that describe it. And so I usually give the example of, for years I've used mother. So mother is related to father, is related to daughter, is related to grandfather. Mm-hmm. In the same way, in every language, regardless of what word we're using for mother and grandfather or mother and daughter, those relationships and the ties stay the same. And so that's the entity. And when I talk about it that way, some people think, well, I'm not doing international SEO, I don't care about other languages. But it's not the point that it's necessarily, you know, crosses all languages. The point is, it is the thing, it is not just the keyword. And so that means it can be keywords and text, but it can also be video, audio, and those things layered in with other things like context. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if I'm searching for cute puppy pictures, Google is immediately going to want to know, am I just looking to look at pictures, or do I want cute puppies I can buy and pictures of those? You know, and so it's already trying to contextualize this concept of cute puppies and try and use that to get the right results at the top of the search results and make the next step really obvious and easy from the search result.
Absolutely. And Google, as the kind of conveyor, it's actually trying to understand intent and trying to be able to provide you elements and medium that help you make a better decision. And I just, for our listeners, I want to make sure that you see where we're going to go here. We're talking about this as a concept. We're going to be moving into the portability of Medium, but we're also going to be talking about MUM and voice search in our second episode. So we're going to try and fancy in all of our different areas. It's going to be very difficult, but we're going to get there here. So Google identifies an entity as anything that is a singular, unique, well-defined, and distinguishable. And there, Google's moving away from keywords for a few reasons, right? One, keywords are usually very specific to a certain language, just like you're talking about. It's also very hard to build contextual connections with keywords, because keywords are derivatives of a thing and by their very nature, somewhat isolated to the thing. Those keywords are part of a transactional makeup of the consumer, but it's only, they're kind of pulling at strings to actually go further into the concepts that we're talking about right here. The things are related, and the knowledge graph is what we're really talking about here. Google's knowledge graph actually plays a huge role in this entity concept. So, by the way, Cindy, Morty and I actually discussed something here just recently about the possibility that the reliance on inbound links in Google's early days, in its infancy, was a way for Google to actually understand entities and the relationship more so than just the quality or the quantity, more importantly, of all of those different links that are out there in the early days. What do you think about that?
It's true to some extent, but there are other things that Google did that I think more readily feed the entity understanding. But yes, in the early days, links were a way of Google understanding in a very basic way so that you didn't have to hand code all of these relationships in. Mm-hmm. If you're selling shoes and you link over to this other section of your site and it's selling socks and you link back and forth a lot, that maybe shoes and socks, you know, are related.
Right.
And that could be within your site or from one site to another. You know, if the city of Denver links to the state of Colorado, that probably means something, and vice versa.
Exactly. As the child of Google is trying to find its way and understand the world, Knowledge Graph is another coin of the realm here. And for the users or listeners who haven't come across Knowledge Graph before, it's a connection map, basically, being able to see the connections of these different entities that we're talking about. Everyone has access to the Google Knowledge Graph API, so it can actually be used to help perform entity searches for any developer, right? Pulls from a lot of different factors like relatedness, notability, contribution, as well as different references. And I'm about to go into I'm going to pull back from that because I want to stay in just the concepts that we're talking about right here. So in your words, you're the Sherpa here. Share with us what Knowledge Graph really has done for the organization side of or at least how to map things, right? The things existed before everything else. Now we're just trying to map them.
Yeah. So Google has been building out their Knowledge Graph for a number of years, but the big boom in Knowledge Graph build out seemed to happen in search results after the launch of mobile first indexing. Mm-hmm. And from the beginning, Google was talking about mobile first indexing as a change from one crawler to another, from default crawling and indexing by the desktop crawler to default crawling and indexing by the mobile crawler. But Google had been crawling with the mobile crawler a lot already, and I just didn't see that as a meaningful explanation of what was going on. And so to me, I immediately started calling it entity-first indexing because it seemed to be much more around clustering different kinds of content around a topic. So if you have this topic and you have it in videos and images and text and websites, then putting all of those things together to really do justice to the entity.
We're proud to have Site Strategics as a sponsor of Edge of the Web. We're pioneers in the agile digital marketing methodology. Core specialties that we provide are technical SEO, including Core Web Vitals optimization, search engine marketing, social media marketing and management, focus on conversion rate optimization, truly focus on results-based marketing that works. We've also developed a unique omnichannel media marketing and content curation process that's guided by our weekly R&D. From our Edge of the Web interviews, we incorporate the best techniques for our content broadcast strategy and execution. If you're interested in what we can do for you, just give us a call at 877-SEO-4-WEB or 877-736-4932. All right, so mobile first indexing really had a misnomer to it, that it wasn't just that it's responsive, not that it was, hey, everybody needs to have a responsive aperture for their website so they can render on those smartphones. That wasn't the case. You actually were sniffing that out even earlier about what mobile first indexing really meant. It had to do with the portability of concepts. So I'm going to tee that up to you. Go run with that for a second.
For a long time, Google has kind of hinted that when they use the word mobile, they don't necessarily mean mobile phone as much as they mean the mobility of the content or the idea or the concept or the content. And so looking at some of Google's conferences and what they were presenting about, they were presenting about cloud-hosted things and making things work cross-device, adapting things in the cloud. You know, they talk about all this stuff much earlier than most SEOs were talking about it. But the idea was to make one piece of content work everywhere. And that is the mobility or the portability of the technology, because they were, you have to think about it from a business perspective. Google has limited resources, even though it seems like they're incredibly rich and have all the money in the world. They have to make profit. They have to answer to a board. So they have to find efficient ways to do things. And so the way that they were doing things before mobile first indexing was originally, you know, they did suggest that instead of having one page that was responsive, they said you should have an MDOT and have a desktop version and link these two with bidirectional annotation, which is, you know, a word we haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah.
But that was the official recommendation. And then they were like, wait, then we have to crawl and index everything twice and we have to reconcile what's here and not here and why. And that's a lot of extra work. And so then they said, well, do responsive design. And they end up chasing their tail every time, right? Because everyone was like, oh, we'll do responsive design. And they used a bunch of JavaScript and because they didn't, you know, the mobile first was a new concept. And so they built these responsive design pages that were heavier and slower than the original desktop pages. So first thing. So Google was like, oh, let's try AMP, do AMP, which was kind of a step backwards, right? Because it was back to a separate page situation.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. So the portability of content and the limiting of wasted overhead is really important. And I'll throw in, let me build on what Morty was telling you. So Morty was saying that Google used the link graph to understand related concepts. And that sounds true. They haven't, Google hasn't come out and said that, but it sounds true. Seems reasonable. But they've also used just thinking back to the concept of entities being language agnostic, they also use hreflang. When I have one page that's translated five times and I have hreflang tags on all of those, and I say, this is Spanish, this is French, this is German, but they all say the same thing as what's on this English page.
Right.
And Google's algorithm, let's say, is especially good at English because it was written in English by people primarily who spoke English originally, and schema is based in English. Lots of things are English. So they said, okay, we really understand the English version of the page, but this German version of the page has all these words that are crammed together and really long, and that's hard for our algorithm, but we can take the English version, understand how language works here, and then map it to get a better understanding of the page in German and the words and the way the language works in German. If we know that these are all the same, then it can accelerate Google's understanding of a lot of different things. So that's another way that they were trying to efficiently build things that would inform the algorithm or inform the functionality of the knowledge graph in an ongoing way without having to be hand-coded. And the other thing to know is that as SEOs, we talk a lot about the knowledge graph because that's what shows up in search results.
Right.
But what Google says is above the knowledge graph and where entities kind of live, they call the topic layer. So I think of knowledge graph as just a representation of the topic layer. And yes, you know, a lot of what's probably in the topic layer is represented in the knowledge graph, but they can't put everything. They have to choose, right?
Right.
So they know more than what they put in the knowledge graph. And maybe they have things in the topic layer that are like common questions about this topic or common next steps or common misconceptions or common intents. And they can layer the concept with this other stuff in the topic layer that sometimes might be, you know, here's what we know about a concept that's related. Like we know a lot about bread and you're talking about toast. These things seem related. What do you like on your bread versus what do you like on your toast? Probably good questions, both, you know, and so they can make connections and just build.
See, as a sidebar, and I appreciate that expose there because that actually gives the framework of what Google has evolved to, and on top of that, how Google's using us as well. Because that hreflang tag, we were sold that this was to be able to make this much more appealing to different foreign country audiences. No. This was to connect the dots and actually trying to find the relationships. So every once in a while, more often than not actually, Google's actually rolling out particular technology for us to adopt, right? Because we think it's going, hey, we're going to get a jump on our competitor out there. But it's actually entity-related translations. And that, you actually, you had a presentation about 5 months ago, which was an iteration of a previous presentation you had back in around Mother's Day. And you actually were talking about AMP. And AMP in its own way was a prefetch. It was actually going and fetching content prior to the rendering of the page so it could actually understand content even more quickly. Although it was a backwards slide towards a mobile rendering, it was actually to understand content faster, right?
Well, yes. Yes, to some degree. I think that, you know, Google does things for a variety of reasons. There's usually not just one. Sure. And so I do believe that when they were doing hreflang or AMP, they thought it would be for the benefit of the user, but they're not going to do something and not get...
Leverage it. Yeah, absolutely.
Leverage it for learning. And so I think that, you know, hreflang they used for learning, I think also AMP, but maybe not just the prefetching. Maybe they're just learning what is, you know, we take an AMP version of a page and a regular version of a page. We have bidirectional annotation, just like MDOT and desktop. And they look at these and say, what can we learn about how to make regular versions of a page faster without sacrificing the core concept that's available in the AMP version? And potentially they're learning things like that. You know, I think after AMP came out, we had the browser-based caching. And I think that could have been a direct result of learning like, oh, every site seems to struggle with this. And if we just handle that, that takes a bulk of the load time away. You know, it makes it much faster. So I think that the prefetch was probably more about load time and making the AMP version a really good example, but perhaps they were using prefetch to learn something about the AMP version and relay that back to the traditional version as well. But you can usually guarantee that whatever they've incentivized with the new thing that they're using to incentivize good rankings, whether it's AMP or hreflang or schema, author tagging or, you know, whatever, go back into history. It has a user benefit, but it also has a training benefit. And that's why we see things where they get really big and important. We all do it. We all take the time to convince our clients to do it. And it's rewarded for a little while and then it fades. Yep. And it's because like Google got what they needed. They got the training data out of everyone using us as an army of people to put code, put training data on the web that they can crawl. And that's not, you know, that's just clever. That's good business. I don't fault them for it.
Cindy, Cindy, this is how Skynet actually starts to realize itself. You realize that. This is we are all being used as beta test. We are being as all reconnaissance. At some point in time, it will become sentient. And see, you'll just hear it now. Is that this has been the case? Maximize your clients' budgets using Wix. Use every dollar towards growth and revenue-driving assets by relying on Wix's enterprise-grade security and reliability. Work more efficiently using Wix's SEO automation and scalable SEO solutions to deliver sustainable results without vulnerabilities, downtime, and workflow inefficiencies for any website of any size. Fix less, grow more with Wix. Go over to edgeoftheweberadio.com/Wix today to learn more. So let me transition ourselves over to kind of stop along this way here. We're actually kind of doing a timeline here. Let's jump into the mobile side. Mobile SEO means portable SEO, and you've actually kind of lay the groundwork of concepts of cross-device, cross-medium, and we're going to talk more about medium in the next episode because medium has a lot of the same conveyance of intent that we're experiencing. But you also saw this technology change move into a larger understanding. We've moved from, as you said, that monolithic type of functional structures to microservices, and then breaking down those microservices into functions as a service, individual feature sets, individual connections of processing or goals, all can be actually combined now to a custom pattern of information that the user is actually looking for. So you're breaking down the elements And it's not the, I mean, the elements, those features are actually represented now on the SERP itself in so many different ways. And on top of that, combined experiences as well. You talk about the tokenization of search. So I tried to do this enough justice here. Take us there in this concept. What is the tokenization of search?
Yeah, so just talking about the big monolithic apps versus microservices versus function as a service, this is a trend that's just happening in the realm of development, and I see it echoed in the way Google's working and the way Google wants things to work, and it all makes sense, right? When you build one monolithic app, it does all the things, and it's hard to get into, so we break it down into smaller things that can do part of the job, and then you break it down into the individual pieces, and so it's kind of like if I gave you a Lego set that they were all glued together, that's not very fun. And then I give you Legos and some of them are already glued together and you just have five pieces to put together, that's better, but it's way cooler and more useful. And you have the potential to do a lot more. You know, you can build it by design with all the Legos one at a time, or you can go get creative and do your own thing. And I think that's what Google really wants to do and where they're wanting to go. And so it takes the idea of portability a little bit further. Mm-hmm. It's in a way that's distasteful to a lot of SEOs and web people, because it becomes, how easy is it for Google to lift content from your site and represent it?
Right.
And so the portability is, can we easily lift this and show it in a search result? Can we easily lift this and show it over here? What if we want to put this, you know, we want this in the knowledge graph sometimes, but we want this next to it from another site, and we also want to show part of your app. So it gives the end user a lot more flexibility in what they get to present. And it is perceived to be good for the user because they can get individual feedback on individual pieces of a thing rather than the whole thing. And so it's kind of like me making you read the entirety of a very long page, even though you see the heading for the answer that you're looking for down there.
Absolutely.
Right? And so what you want is just that answer. What Google is trying to do with the advent of what I was originally calling fraggles, that Google started calling passages, and people say, you know, what's the big deal? We haven't seen passage rankings really take effect. And, you know, they switched that messaging. I always pay attention about the messaging. They switched from passage indexing to passage ranking.
That was interesting. You're absolutely right. That and passage ranking really was oriented from the SEOs that couldn't get a handle on what was really happening in the pieces that Google or that was actually that were actually taking out. It was that function as a service mindset, is that I want that, I want that, I want that. Ranking was still in the mindset of SEOs, right?
I don't see passage ranking here. There's no such thing as passage ranking. Well, maybe, you know, there is. Probably. Mm-hmm. But I think it was really passage indexing. Yeah. And I think that the original messaging was probably just too risky for them to have everyone really understand that, you know, they used to look at a page as an entirety, and that's not necessarily fair. And that was incentivizing webmasters to build lots of thin content because they would say, oh, well, you can't put two topics on a page, God forbid. One topic will drown the other one out. So you had to make a bunch of thin content. And that was making Google's life hard because they had to crawl an index and eject the thinnest and worst of the thin content.
Yep.
So they realized they had this backwards incentive where they were incentivizing thin content because they weren't good at sectioning out pieces of a page and ranking the page based on that section, or from a more futuristic perspective and a voice search perspective, ranking just the piece that matters and showing just the piece that matters. So for instance, if you're yelling at a Google Assistant a question, what you don't want is for it to read the entirety of the page. You want it to see the heading and jump to that and just read you that.
Exactly. So this is where we're actually going to come up to the edge here, no pun intended, and jump into our second part of this interview, because we've broken the concepts down of entities. We've gone through the portabilization process of going into mobile. We now have a fractionalized feature set, and Google certainly is representing these type of features in its SERP, and it's I don't want to say poaching, it's processing a number of different pieces in order to feed the consumer exactly what they're wanting when they're wanting, so they don't. So as much as they're not bogged down by crawl and loaded bloated sites, they're also not loaded down by the entire site. So they're finding these choice answers. It's on us as web content producers to have enough valuable answers in these different pockets. And it is actually interesting whenever you see a jump link from a question, jump over to a page and it highlights a section and then also picks up another section down there, meaning, hey, you didn't have the full picture there, or it would have highlighted everything. It's almost like Google's actually giving you a mirror back of how well you really know your own content, right?
Yeah, the AMP highlighting and featured snippets was such a view into what Google is capable of. And I think a lot of SEOs underestimate how good Google's language processing was, because I usually, if I see highlighting and then not highlighting and then more highlighting, I assume that Google is like, this is fluff. We don't need this.
Yeah.
This is not the answer. This is the answer.
Exactly. So that's SEO now, everyone, is that you're optimizing your content. It's not even marketing anymore. It's actually feeding the knowledge graph and knowing your topic enough or your client's topic enough to be able to present enough information to make the full picture of that service or that product or that thing. And it's kind of pockmarked right now, is that if Google's processing your information, you're not going to have the full muster of all the different elements. It's picking choice information from you and it's learning all the way along. And, you know, is it going to reward you with full answers and full SERP features? No, because it's actually putting a mottled picture together of all the different content. You know, it's one of those paintings where you get real close and you really can't see the picture, but you back up and now you have the full picture of that concept with all these different parts that play. There's the visual imagery for the day. All right, we're going to stop here, jump over to our second segment here. Cindy, thank you so much for the run-up here, because this really does kind of set the concept of where we are in SEO. So we really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, we're going to get lifted. We might as well actually play the game here. Make sure that you listen to the second episode of the Cindy Crum interview and go over to visit edgeofthewebradio.com. You can check out all the information as well as all the presentations that Cindy has put forth. Thanks to our sponsors. Make sure you jump over there and give them a shout and check out their services, because they're certainly betting that you guys are the right individuals for their products. So check out all the must-see videos over at Edge of the Web Radio. On top of that, our YouTube channel, where we're slicing and dicing little pockets of information, just like Google's telling us to, over at YouTube. And if you can't wait, we're going to have the entire show put up there as well. But for all of us over here, why don't you give us a quick review on ratethispodcast.com/edge today? Let us know how we're doing on this show as well as others, because that helps us get the algorithm going in our favor and help reach different listeners that haven't come across us yet. So from all of us over at Edge, be safe, be well, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.